The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Some people expect solutions to be expensive to be effective. This is not true. Everyone needs somebody who can be supportive and a guide. You'll find the answers you're looking for and the tools to both find answers and offer solutions on the Dr. Melanie Show. Now, here's your host, Dr. Melanie Barton.
Welcome to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. Are you having memory problems? Are you concerned that you might have Alzheimer's disease? Did you know there's such a thing as early onset Alzheimer's? Do you know what the 10 signs and symptoms are? Stay with me and I'll tell you after the first break. Early onset Alzheimer's disease presents with a different cognitive profile and a course of development. In the early stages, the memory function is sometimes spared, but other cognitive functions may not be. Kathy Murray and Michael Ellenbogen will tell us how this disease struck them in the prime of their professional careers. And neurologist Dr. David Weissman will give us some facts about the illness. First, we're going to talk with Michael. So welcome, Michael.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Melanie.
Well, I'm very glad that I could. You know, I've learned and getting prepared to have you on the show, I've been trying to read things about it, and I didn't know with early onset Alzheimer's that maybe the memory isn't the primary thing to go. So is your memory affected at this point in the disease?
I would have to say my memory is definitely impacted. I definitely cannot remember a lot of things, especially a lot of short-term things. Sometimes, you know, if my life depended on it, I would not be able to remember. So I would have to say it's definitely had an impact on me.
What do you do to help yourself remember things?
Well, when I first got started, I started writing me notes, but what ended up happening is I ended up having so many different notes that I started forgetting what the notes were all about.
Uh-huh.
So to be honest with you, I really just kind of rely on, you know, just getting by every day, and that's pretty much it. If it's something really critical, then I'll try to write a note, but otherwise it just ends up piling up, so I end up getting lost having too many notes eventually.
I can understand that. I have Lyme disease, which affects the memory. And so on my smartphone, there's a place for notes, and then there's the daily list. So I'll put on there what I need to remember, and then it gives me a reminder if I put a time element to it. So that helps me because I would do like you. I'd have so many notes everywhere, and I couldn't remember what the notes related to, or I'd have a note, a piece here and a piece there, so it got real confusing. So I'm glad that you're doing what works for you. How long did it take you to get diagnosed?
Well, I actually started experiencing problems at age 39, and it actually took almost 10 years to be diagnosed. I slowly began, I guess, experiencing issues as far as forgetting acronyms, people's phone numbers in the company, meetings that I was supposed to go to. I mean, I was one of those people that can remember everything. I never even had a day minder. So it slowly started impacting me that way, and I went to try to go to doctors, and they all were telling me that there was nothing wrong, that it was just stressed. And like I said, it took 10 years till I was finally able to get a diagnosis where it came back conclusive that I had Alzheimer's.
So how did they finally make that diagnosis? What sort of tests did they do? How did they say, this is what it is?
Well, unfortunately, there is no 100% way of diagnosing Alzheimer's. The best way that they can do it is they eliminate all the other possibilities, and then they come to the conclusion. Now, one thing that helped in my particular case was getting a PET scan.
Okay.
The PET scan indicated that I did have Alzheimer's. And again, even after 10 years, luckily for my wife, who's a medical person, she's the one who actually pushed them to do the PET scan, because she did some research from one of the psychologists who had spoken with us, had indicated to us that, did you ever consider that it could be Alzheimer's? And she never did at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And her research pointed her to come up with that conclusion. And luckily, the doctor followed her recommendation, because if he didn't, I'd probably still be trying to figure out what was wrong with me.
Right, right. So of the various stages of the disease, where are you in the disease process now?
Well, I would have to say I'm in the mild stage at this point in time.
Good.
And then again, you know, you have good days and bad days, you know. And, you know, some days you tend to be a little bit worse. But the majority of time I'm pretty good. I mean, I'm very surprised considering, you know, the things I've been able to accomplish, you know, considering I have Alzheimer's. And, you know, there's many people who do have Alzheimer's that, you know, it's not the end of the world. You know, there's still a lot of things that we're capable of doing. So, you know, you know, people shouldn't give up on it.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. And you're at the mild stage, and you've been at this mild stage since the age of 39, you think?
Well, no, I've definitely progressed worse over time. I mean, I think in the early stages, you know, when I was having problems, it was not as bad as it is today. But, you know, we slowly progress worse and worse, and, you know, certain skills are impacted. And it's not always something that you notice, you know, or that I can notice. It's something that, you know, the people who I deal with on a day-to-day, like my wife, would be able to understand, you know, what's physically, happening to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, like your cognitive ability to reason something or understand a joke, things like that, are those the kind of things that get affected?
Yes, they are. And it's funny, because sometimes I'm capable of understanding a joke, you know, and, you know, other times I'm not, you know, where somebody's like just joking around with me and I take them very seriously. So that becomes an issue sometimes, you know, and a little bit challenging when you're dealing, you know, with other people out there, you know, because you're, you know, they may take you the wrong way because you said something wrong, you know, in response
right.
back.
And you may not know you've said something that's wrong.
Oh, exactly.
Right. Correct. You might put a word in that's not the appropriate word, and they're looking at you funny, and you're going, what? What? So, and for me, I notice nighttime is a difficult time for me. Are there times of day that are more prone to affect you?
Well, I am definitely sharp in the morning, and as we get later towards the evening, I don't seem to function as well or as clear. I have more trouble focusing. And, like, when people are talking to me, to just kind of stay on topic of what they're talking and, you know, and grasping what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's definitely harder for me at later in the evening.
Are you able to read?
Well, I am and I'm not.
I still read,
but I don't absorb what I read. And it's a real challenge, because sometimes I'm reading something that I really enjoy, but I can only recall back, you know, maybe 3-4 lines.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes I got to keep rereading over and over just to try to make sense of things, of what I'm reading. It's really difficult, especially when you're trying to do something like set up a VCR, which, you know, following procedures and all. I can't do those things anymore, and yet
right.
that's the technology I used to do at one point in time. So it's very frustrating, you know, when it comes to doing things like that. I have to rely on my wife or somebody else to help me out.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just a matter of comprehending what to do. It's putting that comprehension into action and then connecting the dots and being able to have all the pieces go together.
Correct.
So, and like you said, there might be times of the day you could do something, or you might have been able to do something 5 minutes ago and now you can't. And it's frustrating because you tell yourself, I know how to do this.
And that's really the worst part, to know that you're capable of doing something and you
right.
want to do it at that moment and you know you can't.
Right.
I can't begin to tell you how frustrating that is.
Mm-hmm. And I know my family will say to me, Mom, you don't know, but you're doing things that concern us. And I'll go, well, tell me. And they'll go, you really aren't aware, are you? And I said, no, I'm not. And so you don't know how these diseases affect your brain, because it's affecting your brain.
That's right, and it affects everybody so differently that, you know, it's not just one cookie cutter that everybody knows what to look for at you.
Mm-hmm. And I asked your neurologist, who is going to be on a recording here in a little bit, and I asked him, I said, so doing these memory things, you know, like doing Sudoku and playing Scrabble and all that we've been taught can really help us keep that memory active. Do they work? And I'll let you listen to his answer, which was a surprise to me. So we'll see. I'm going to keep working those puzzles and keep working on the cognitive things to keep my mind, that area of my brain, still being used. So do you do anything to keep your mind as sharp as it can be?
I don't do things like that. In fact, I have learned from hearing other places that it's actually good for you to do that at the beginning, you know, before you get to those stages that once you have Alzheimer's. But once you have it, it actually, I've heard that it actually makes it worse.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. All right. I'll keep that in mind. So if we were to compare your life today to how it was prior to the age of 39, how is it different now?
Oh, it's so different. You know, besides the impact it had on my working, it's also had a major impact on my hobbies. Not that I had a lot of hobbies, but I used to love boating. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, you don't realize what it takes to process to maneuver a boat. I no longer can do something that simple.
Mm-hmm.
I try to take on some new hobbies like golfing, and I just can't process where the ball goes. Or if I take my eye off where the ball lands for 1 second just to get my clubs, I forgot where the ball's at.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes it very challenging to do new things. I used to be able to do almost anything around the house. Now, you know, there's so many things I can no longer do. And, you know, I used to be the type of person that would not procrastinate and do things immediately. And now things just sit and sit and sit and sit. And I don't even understand why.
Uh-huh.
But they just do.
Do you lose time? Do you lose track of time?
I don't think it's I'm losing the track of time. Some things I think I'm afraid to do, like, believe it or not, I bought cans of paint to paint my house to do one room, I guess, 3 years ago, and I still haven't done it.
Uh-huh.
I'm just afraid to do it.
Yeah, yeah. And is that fear something that the Alzheimer's creates, or is it because there's still that part of your brain that knows you used to know how to do it, and you're concerned that maybe you'll mess it up?
Well, I think that's part of it, that I'm afraid that I'm going to mess it up is probably the biggest problem. I mean, if somebody's there with me, I would probably be willing to do it, you know, somebody can bail me out if I run into a situation. But I guess I'm a little concerned that if I start painting and I'm alone, that I might need somebody else's assistance.
Yeah, yeah, I gotcha. So this must be extremely challenging and frustrating for your wife.
It is, especially for somebody who's still working and trying to, you know, keep up with everything. You know, unfortunately, you know, because I no longer can work, somebody has to continue to work to pay the bills. And it makes it very challenging, you know, for her and stressful for her.
Mm-hmm. Are you able to get disability?
Yes, I am. The sad part is I wish I didn't get disability, because originally I was paying a large sum of money into my existing company to get long-term disability. I actually would have been able to collect 70% of my salary. However,
oh,
because I was terminated because of not being able to perform in my job, and I didn't get a diagnosis for so many years later, you can only go back 2 years to collect. So I lost all that money that I would have been able to collect. So now, unfortunately, I've become a burden on the Social Security system.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's tragic. Oh, sorry that happened to you. So that would be good advice for anybody out there who's just been newly diagnosed, if they're in that same situation, to make sure they get all that documentation so they can collect that long-term disability.
But that's true. I mean, it's so important to get that within 2 years of you leaving that workforce, because if you don't, the problem is being able to get to collect back. And the problem is most doctors are very reluctant to label somebody at a young age that they have Alzheimer's.
I can understand that. They wouldn't want to do that. Well, I want to make sure we get in, you know, how people can go find out about your causes that you're doing, you know, to make things the public educated. So tell them where they can go to your website.
Well, I've created a website called Michael Ellenbogen Movement, and that's MICHAELLENBOGENMOVEMENT.com. And basically what I'm looking for is anybody who's willing to come on board and help out in some way. It could be 5 minutes of their time a month or whatever time they want to give. What I'm really interested in is the average people to come on board. I'm looking for especially CEOs. I'm looking for some big superstars to come on board and embrace Alzheimer's. You know, you hear so much being talked about other diseases out there, like cancer or HIV, but you rarely hear much about Alzheimer's. You're starting to hear a little bit more today. But we have such a huge disparity around this disease that people don't even understand. For example, they only contribute 18.7% NIH for cancer. They contribute 9.9% for HIV, and they only contribute 1.4% to Alzheimer's. That is why I decided to do this and stand up for those who no longer can. We need to get people on board to help out for this. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're all very important diseases. All I'm saying is they should all be treated fairly.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Is there one particular celebrity you'd like to have as your spokesperson?
I am not picky. I am looking for any major celebrity to come on board. Sadly to say, you know, while we're impacted by this disease, that's not going to do it. It's going to take celebrities to come out and help us in order for us to get action. And it doesn't matter what celebrity. I just need them all to come on board and help.
Okay. Well, we're going to hope that they do that. So once again, the website is www.michaelellenbogenmovement.com. So let's hope that people do come forth and volunteer their time or ask how they can help, or maybe some corporations would donate some money for research.
That would be fantastic also.
Okay. So they would go through your website to make the initial contact, and then we'll see what to do from there. Is that correct?
Yes. There's an email address through there that they can reach out to me by email.
Okay. All right. Well, Michael, what we're going to do is we're going to go to a break, and later towards the end of the show, we'll bring you back in so that we can tie it all up. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Let's go to a break.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
How do you make the right decisions in your life when it comes to your health? By education and proven practices. Tune in to Holistic Therapies with Dr. Jeffrey Kiker. Dr. Jeff will speak to the leading experts in natural health care to help you take charge of your health and well-being. It's a look at the best from alternative health and tested clinical methods designed to give you everything you need to live a better, healthier life. Holistic Therapies can be heard every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Do you have or know someone who has multiple sclerosis, Lyme disease, or any other chronic illness? Advanced Cell Training is a restorative, self-healing modality that I, Dr. Melanie, have had phenomenal results with, reducing physical symptoms I've had for over 20 years. This process can be done right in the comfort of your own home. Request their free DVD at AdvancedCellTraining.com. That's AdvancedCellTraining.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. We're learning about early onset Alzheimer's disease today. The 10 signs and symptoms of Alzheimer's are memory loss, difficulty performing tasks, problem with language, getting lost in familiar places, poor judgment, trouble with abstract thinking, misplacing things, change in mood or behavior, change in personality, loss of initiative. Do you know what the stages of the illness are? If you'll stay tuned after the second break, I'll answer that question. Right now, we're going to hear my interview with Dr. David Weissman from Philadelphia, and after that, we'll directly go to a break. So let's hear this interview. Today, we have Dr. Weissman with us, who is out of the Philadelphia area, and we're talking about early onset Alzheimer's. So, Dr. Weissman, is that the only kind of patient you treat, or do you do other kinds of medical conditions as well?
I am an Alzheimer's disease specialist, but I'm also a general neurologist, and I treat all conditions of the brain, spinal cord, and nerves. I'm actually a vascular neurologist as well, so I have an interest in strokes.
Okay. So it's good that you have a wide variety of areas you cover, because with Alzheimer's patients as well as with others, it's not just one thing that's affected. It can be many areas.
That's right. A lot of problems within the brain play a role in the presentation of memory disorders. So not to say that other specialties cannot diagnose and manage Alzheimer's disease, but I think it is good to have a background in the brain when you're dealing with Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And it is a special interest of mine. I did my fellowship at University of San Diego in Alzheimer's disease. I did research, and I actually did my research in a different dementia called dementia with Lewy bodies, but it's still mostly Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm. And did you have a reason you chose that as your interest? Was there a family member or some situation that it was became an interest of yours?
No, but I had an idea that I wanted to really devote my life to something horrible. And even though I try to tell patients that Alzheimer's disease isn't that horrible because it's so slow, it really is a terrible disease. It's a catastrophic brain problem in which the self just starts to melt away, and mm-hmm. cognitive impairments are whittled down to nothing. Mm-hmm. It's very sad. It's tragic. And I wanted to devote my professional life to fighting it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that would be a worthy thing to do, and I have not been disappointed. The other reason I wanted to get involved with Alzheimer's disease is because within my career, it's going to change. When I started my residency, new medications, which are marginally effective, had just been on the market for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And but we knew a lot about Alzheimer's disease, and we know a lot about the molecular underpinnings of why people get it. And so this is the time, it's a very exciting time in Alzheimer's disease research, in that in the next 10 to 20 years, we're going to have a lot to do for Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad, because I know that some of the medications have really bad side effects, and if the patient can't tell you what's going on, it's kind of difficult to know. So I'm glad that you're trained in these various areas of the brain so you can see what's going on. So I'm very glad for that. So the two other guests I have on the show today are Michael Ellenbogen and Kathy Murray, who have early onset. Do you have any clue as to why those two people, not maybe just them, but anybody in particular, would get the early onset Alzheimer's?
Well, all we can say so far, most of this is speculation, that people inherit genes that put them at risk of certain diseases. So it's kind of disconcerting to think about, but we've all inherited genes that weigh the deck one way or another. We want them to weigh the deck so that we don't get these diseases, but, of course, some of us do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a genetic susceptibility, and there are probably dozens of different genes that weigh the susceptibility, either slightly increasing your chance or decreasing your chance. You don't get a say. You just have to pick your parents wisely.
Mm-hmm.
And after that happens, something triggers these brain changes. And we don't really know what those are either. Although, based on studies of thousands of people, we do have a clue that, more of a clue of what's really bad. Somewhere along the way, a certain percentage of people will develop Alzheimer's disease. 1% of the population has Alzheimer's disease by the age of 65.
Hmm.
There's no real great cutoff for very early people with Alzheimer's disease. It seems like in the fifth decade, if you have quite a few of these susceptibility genes, and enough of the triggers, or basically who knows, you get Alzheimer's disease.
Hmm. Okay. So when you say, you know, the genes, do you find that out before, or do you wait to find out, you know, if something's going on, you check to see the genetic composition? I mean, if you have it, you have it. But if you, if your family has it, do you recommend that people get tested? I mean, does it make a difference?
I recommend against testing myself.
Okay.
Will it really make a difference if you know that you have a susceptibility to Alzheimer's disease? You could have a susceptibility to Alzheimer's disease, but never have the disease trigger. And so where are you then?
Mm-hmm.
And right now, we really only know about one common gene that is one of the major susceptibility genes for Alzheimer's disease. I've seen people who are very early who don't have that gene. And I've seen people who are very late with Alzheimer's disease who do.
Okay.
So it doesn't really say anything about if you're going to get it. It's just an increased risk. So screening for yourself, and I've had conversations that are like this, is futile.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's good to know, because then they're going to worry the rest of their life. And every time they forget something, is it normal aging or, you know, is it starting? And it can be very anxiety producing, which can make it worse.
Totally. I absolutely agree. And it's difficult. I mean, these calculations are really hard, you know, but the thing is, it's not a gene like Huntington's disease.
Okay.
Huntington's disease is another neurodegenerative disease. It's really horrible. And people have the gene, they're going to get the disease. It's a high fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the gene, then eventually you will get the disease. All of these susceptibility genes are different.
Okay.
They put you at risk. And if you're positive, you're right. It will totally increase your stress. And if you're negative, it shouldn't really decrease your stress, even though it will, because you still could get it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, do you think there's the possibility that there's some environmental factors, like, you know, toxins that could contribute to getting the Alzheimer's?
There are definitely environmental triggers. The ones that we know a lot about are diabetes. That seems to increase susceptibility. Maybe it acts as a trigger on some of these genes.
Hmm.
Midlife obesity,
okay.
Especially truncal obesity, probably tied into diabetes and glucose problems and problems with insulin. Head trauma is another one. Now, head trauma is really sticky because head trauma, repetitive head injuries, can create another dementing illness called chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a recent football player who committed suicide, one of many, a string of ex-NFL professional football players who commit suicide. And it's too early to tell if this man had it, but previous people have had non-Alzheimer changes of a protein that's built up in their brain, and that's another dementia. But still, it does look like repetitive head trauma can also play a role in Alzheimer's disease as well.
So, like the post-concussive brain syndrome from people that have had, you know, the concussions, can that possibly contribute as well?
You know, it's actually maybe even worse than that, because concussions, people know they've had a concussion.
Right.
That bell has been rung. But it might be that just concussions are a marker of somebody who's had enough head blows. And head blows might be what really changes and what makes a difference. So these things might be asymptomatic, and that somebody gets a head blow, and kind of shrugs it off, doesn't even get a concussion. And that's a trigger for Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And that actually goes double for this other thing, chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Okay. So what's on the cutting edge of the research for all of this? What direction are they looking at? What kinds of things are they studying?
Well, we know that all neurodegenerative diseases, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, ALS, all of them seem that they are due to abnormal proteins that build up in the central nervous system. Alzheimer's disease is no exception. So the hope is that by targeting these proteins that build up in the brain through a wide variety of mechanisms, either decreasing their production, getting rid of them faster, and actually targeting them with making the immune system active against them,
mm-hmm.
can get rid of them and hopefully have an impact on the disease, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's at the cutting edge. We've known about these proteins for about 20 years, and over only the last 5 years have we started to try to mess around with that system.
Mm-hmm.
Again, decrease the protein production and try to get rid of it in some way to see if it makes a difference.
Okay. Are they studying the glutathione levels, since that's related to all chronic illnesses and we need that to, you know, fight off free radicals and help with aging and all that kind of stuff? So are they doing any studies with that?
There are studies to see, so we do know that, just in general, about the oxidative damage and free radical formation and things like that. It's been known for a long time that people can develop these proteins in their brains, and they seem like they have resistance to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is, who knows? But it's been speculated that these proteins might be creating free radicals and oxidative damage and then killing nerve cells.
Mm.
I'll tell you that all of these neuroprotective strategies have been very disappointing, not just in Alzheimer's disease, but also sort of throughout the board, okay, meaning not much effect, if any.
Mm.
Some failures as well, like some things that we know just do not work, like coenzyme Q for Parkinson's disease.
Mm.
So while that is interesting, I think that research is now on the back burner.
Okay.
In general, in talking about prevention, somebody should just lead a heart-healthy lifestyle. Fruits and vegetables, a Mediterranean diet, and exercise. Exercise
mm-hmm.
has been really shown to prevent the onset of a lot of bad things, and it's actually been tied in with preventing Alzheimer's disease as well.
I know that I've heard, I don't know if this is accurate, that you do some mind things, you know, like Sudoku, like other games, to keep your mind, that part of the brain, active. Is there any evidence that shows that really does help?
There's an idea that people can develop cognitive reserve and that they're less likely to miss a few dead nerve cells. But the trials in cognitive enhancement have been very disappointing.
Hmm.
Basically, if you have a memory problem, then that stuff is not going to work.
Oh.
I encourage people, if they have a memory problem, first of all, to get diagnosed. But after the diagnosis, if it's Alzheimer's disease, don't do anything frustrating.
Okay. That's good to know. And I know that I have Lyme disease, and so cognitive impairment kind of goes with that. And so I have to keep things consistent and in a place that I can visually remember where they are. Otherwise, if I can't see it, I forget it's there. So are there certain protocols you do with Alzheimer's patients to help them have memory tools, mnemonic devices or something that helps them?
They sort of discover that on their own.
Okay.
It's a very slowly progressive problem.
Okay.
And a lot of people have discovered things that work for them. The problem is the things that worked this month may not work next season. Because
okay.
if you keep a lot of lists, it's a progressive disease, so then you'll forget about the lists in
right.
a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very hard thing to cope with. Basically, what's needed is an adaptable caregiver who's able to kind of deal with things as they come. The caregiver burden with this disease is absolutely astronomical. Mm-hmm. And these are really unsung heroes of our society. They're taking care of loved ones. They're keeping them out of the ER. They're keeping them from being drained on the system. And it just stinks. These people are just run ragged.
And it affects their health, taking care of people they neglect their own, not intentionally, but they're just so exhausted. They don't eat right or sleep right.
So there are real changes that happen from the caregiver burden and the chronic stress that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a disease that really has a lot of ripples.
Yes, definitely. Well, in the time we have left, give us a few words of hope for somebody who's just been diagnosed.
I'm afraid I don't have much hope to say. The medications on the market are used. They do increase memory, but they don't affect the underlying disease process.
Okay.
What I would, I think the only hope is coming from emerging trials. So someone who's been recently diagnosed, there are a lot, there's a lot of interest in this from pharmaceutical companies looking to change these levels of proteins. So that's where hope lies. It's in getting involved with a clinical trial, getting involved with a new medication that could have some hope.
Okay. All right. Well, Dr. Wiseman, this has been very informative, and if people have questions, I'll have them direct them to me, and then I will pass them along to you. Would that be all right?
That'd be great. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule, and we're going to look forward to hearing some good news in the future from all this research.
Terrific.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you living your vital life? One that is showcasing you at your full potential? There are many issues that stand in the way of most people achieving their full potential. We will discuss these issues and how to overcome them each week on The Vital Life, Awakening Your Full Potential, with host Dr. Carolyn Coker Ross. Living the vital life often requires that we trust our own intuitive voice and that we view illness or life challenges as calls to action to reconnect with the deeper urges of our spirit or soul. Tune in Fridays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Step up to the microphone. View the finalists right now on VoiceAmericaKids.tv. America's next great star is waiting to be discovered. Step Up to the Microphone is an exclusive presentation for VoiceAmerica.tv, where you can see and hear America's next top child star. The program is hosted by Voice America's own Cassie Frazier, and new episodes will be available every week exclusively at VoiceAmericaKids.tv. You can say you saw them at the beginning of their superstar career. Tune in to VoiceAmericaKids.tv.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show on the Health and Wellness Channel of Voice America. We're learning about early onset Alzheimer's disease today. The stages of the disease are, first you have your normal kind of conditioning, then you have normal aging forgetfulness, then mild cognitive impairment, then mild Alzheimer's, which is your decreased ability to handle complex functions in daily living, like writing the date. Then you have moderate Alzheimer's, like not wearing appropriate clothing for the weather. Then moderately severe, which is where you can't put the clothing on in a proper fashion. And severe is where the speech becomes limited. Now we're going to talk with Kathy Murray, who was diagnosed at early onset, and she's going to tell us what the journey's been like for her. So welcome, Kathy.
Thank you, Dr. Melanie.
Well, I'm glad that you are able to share with us your story.
Yes, I look forward to that.
So how long did it take you to get diagnosed?
Like Michael indicated, it was a long process for myself as well. My medical records indicated that I first voiced memory and cognitive concerns as far back as 1989. Mm. Over the years, the diagnosis was stress, depression. I've been tested for low B12, thyroid, Lyme disease, seizure disorder, hormone imbalance. In 2008, fast forward, and in 2008, I insisted on answers because the problems were increasingly becoming worse. And in March of 2009 is when I received the younger onset diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. So you knew something was happening. You had the awareness that something wasn't right.
I absolutely did. During my professional career, in the early, I guess the very earliest symptoms, as I was going through some of those, and I just saw my primary physician, she chalked it up to stress with a lot of business travel, being a young mother, two sons, and my position was stressful, so I agreed with that. I assumed that she was probably right. But as the years progressed and the problems were compounding, I would get voicemails, my direct reports would leave me voicemails, and I would try to listen to them, and I couldn't comprehend what they were saying. I would hear the words, and most of the times these were responses that they were coming back to me where I had initiated a question, and I had no idea what they were trying to say. So I would forward my voicemails to my secretary for her to transcribe, because if I could see it in written form, it seemed I could comprehend it better.
Mm-hmm. And are you able to comprehend written word now?
Not if it's in depth. I mean, if it's one or two sentences, yes, and if it's brief. But as far as reading anything that's complex, no. I can read it, but I find that if even a newspaper, if I'm reading an article and I'll get to the third or fourth paragraph, and if it's referring to a particular person, I catch myself saying, I have no idea who this person is, and I go back and say, oh my gosh, this is the subject matter. Reading, and I mean, I lose it that quick, so it's very difficult.
That's hard for you to be able to know that and to function and to not be able to handle that. That's frustrating.
It is.
So what stage of the illness are you at now?
I would say that I am in the mild stage because I'm still fully aware of the time, the season, all my family and friends. It's my short term that's mostly impaired. And again, like Michael, on good days, I seem to function pretty well. But when I do have bad days, and I really just do not function. It's not like a depression or anything like that, but it's just everything is so foggy. Whether I'm trying to just do a load of laundry and wash dishes at the same time, even the simplest of multitasking seems overwhelming.
Mm. So how do you cope with that?
Well, thank goodness my husband is very supportive, and I'm still at a stage of mine where I just say, I do a lot of self-talk, and it's like one of these is just going to have to go. I'm either going to have to focus on the laundry or I'm going to have to focus on the dishes. I'm not able to do both.
Right, right. And for me with the Lyme, I will go start something. And something will distract me, and I'll go do something else, and I don't remember what I was doing beforehand, and I'll walk by it, and I'll go, oh, yeah, I was doing that. So then I'll go back and finish that, and I might have left something undone in the other direction. So does that happen to you?
I can appreciate that because that occurs also.
And I can laugh at it. And yes, that's how I
absolutely
keep myself, you know, it's okay. There's not much you can do about it, but.
No, it's like I said, you know, it's not a disease I would have chosen. I don't like it, but I can't change it. All I can do at this stage is choose how I cope with it.
Mm-hmm. So do you have plans thinking towards the future of what happens when I enter this stage? You know, what will I do? Do you have notes written to yourself or to your family for those times when you are not going to recognize them? Or, you know, I know it's not pleasant to think about, but.
Actually, I have. I have a journal, and I am documenting some of my likes and dislikes. I have actually begun to clean out my closet so that when the time comes, that it will be very simple for my husband to know what to put me in. It's, you know, things of that nature. I want to be comfortable. There are certain colors I hope I never have to wear, and those kind of things are in my journal. It's like, and it may sound simple, but it, to me, it's important. You know, I do want to maintain some dignity. And mm-hmm. if I don't want to wear baby blue now, I don't want to wear baby blue when I get,
right.
when
I gotcha.
am at a stage when maybe I don't recognize everyone. Mm-hmm. And so those type of things, you know, planning for the future, you know, some personal things around the house I've already taken note of that these are very important. And I want to make sure that these are handed down to grandchildren and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. I've talked about, you know, the future, and my husband and I, we have a disagreement on the progression and what I want to do. I would be comfortable going to an assisted living facility. Mm-hmm. He, however, prefers that I stay home and that he becomes my 24/7 caretaker.
That will wear him out. You know
absolutely.
That, and I know that.
And I don't expect him to do that.
No, no. So, and he may feel guilt when the time comes when he realizes he can't do what
right.
he wanted to do.
But he needs to know that and recall that I have verbalized and told him that that's what I prefer and that mm-hmm. I'm okay with it now. Because mm-hmm. I would rather him be healthy and taking care of himself so that when he is able to come and visit, that at least that visit is quality time as much as it can be.
Right. Have you watched the movie The Notebook?
No, I did not.
Okay. It's a very loving, respectfully done movie about what happens as the disease progresses. So
okay. It
may not be something you want, you know, to watch, but it was very well done. So.
No, I have been very open about learning every single thing I can about the disease. You know, I know people hear the term the good, the bad, and the ugly. Well, there is no good to this. It's only bad and ugly, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's a devastating, debilitating disease, but I don't intend to and have not gone into it blindly. I want to know about every stage. I want to know about, you know, every option that I have. I am enrolled in a clinical trial, and I will battle this with every ounce of strength I have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the chances of them finding an effective treatment and a cure during my lifetime, I know, is very slim. But at least while I'm here, I'm going to educate myself the best I can.
Sure. I think that's the thing to do. Do you have long-term care insurance?
No, I do not.
Okay.
It was one of those that I, you know, when I was working, you never think that you're going to need it. So the answer is no.
I luckily got it before I found out that I had the Lyme disease and cancer, and so I was very grateful that I had the foreknowledge to do that. So,
absolutely.
And my daughter says to me, Mom, please keep paying that every year. I need you to do that.
Understand that.
So I do. So if there's somebody listening that's been newly diagnosed, what would you say to them?
I would say, I guess after the initial shock wears off, is to educate themselves. Turn to the National Alzheimer's Association, ALZ.org. It is a wonderful website. Even if their doctor, neurologist, or specialist, or whoever they're seeing has information about it, I think referring to and researching the website and getting engaged and becoming educated so that you know what you're dealing with, and it's not only the progression of the disease, but it's also planning for the future, your financial planning for the future. Mm-hmm. In my case, starting to think about my own death and mm-hmm. what that's going to mean. How do I want that handled? How do I want my personal things handed down through the family? And it may sound morbid, but yet it still gives me some sense of control so that I'm
yes.
not totally given up. And I still have a say in things while I can.
What I think, Kathy, is that all of us are going to die.
Absolutely.
You just know how.
Yes.
Other people don't know how. When I was diagnosed with cancer and had 5 mini strokes, I thought, you know, okay, now I know. This is what's happened. I either can live or I can die, but I can make some choices. So like you're doing, it gave me some parameters. It helped me to be realistic, not morbid, just like what you're
Absolutely.
Saying.
Absolutely.
And so now each day I wake up, it's grace. I have this day. I can think halfway clear. What do I want to do with my day? So it's made me much more appreciative.
Right. I would concur with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Well, how about at this point we bring Michael back in so we can say whatever we want to say to the world to let them know what message you want them to hear. So would you, Brad, bring Michael back in, please?
I'm here.
All right. So Michael and Kathy, you're tremendous in the efforts that you're doing to get this message out to the world. What do you want the 185 people in the world to know, 185 countries to know?
Well, the biggest thing I guess I want to say is we need their help.
Okay.
Unfortunately, people with Alzheimer's can no longer speak for themselves. The caregivers are too busy taking care of their patients. So we need the people who are not involved with Alzheimer's today to get involved. Sadly,
okay.
today, the odds are that within their lifetime, somebody in their family or relatives will have Alzheimer's. So it's best that they get on board now to do something about it before it's too late.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Kathy, what would you like to offer to the world?
I would suggest, I've had the honor of being a national early stage advisor for this past year for the Alzheimer's Association. And I would suggest that anyone who has been diagnosed, again, go to ALZ.org, and their family and friends, join the advocate. There's no money involved or anything like this, but join the advocacy programs that they have on there and let their voices be heard across this country, pretty much what Michael is saying. Let their voices be heard that, the time is now. We need to step up. We need to increase the funding for research and hopefully find a much better treatment and ultimately a cure for our future generations.
Okay. And are you going to encourage your families to do things to make sure their mental health is in good shape, or are you going to encourage them to get tested or not get tested?
Well, in my case, there is no genetic link in my family. No one in my family has ever been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and I have been genetically tested and tested negative for any genes that carried the Alzheimer's.
Okay. All right. Well, Kathy, we need to wrap it up.
Okay.
So thank you very much to both of you for being on the show today and for your contribution. We learned about early onset Alzheimer's today, the 10 warning signs of the disease and the stages. To reach Michael, go to michaelellenboganmovement.com. If you want to reach Kathy, you can contact me and I'll get in contact with her and pass your messages along. Next week, we're going to learn the benefits of the AM Fight Club and yoga. Remember, to help yourself, help someone else. Until next week, goodbye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us this week for the Dr. Melanie Show. Please join your host, Dr. Melanie Barton, again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll see you next week for another great program.